You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, August 22nd, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Heather Hurlburt, Executive Director of the National Security Network, to talk to us about, I guess, what is now, if not the imminent, the already happened fall of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, all the implications surrounding it. Also on the program today, over, 50 people arrested over the weekend protesting the building of the Keystone Pipeline from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to the Gulf of Mexico. 50 of just over 1,000 who plan to get themselves arrested at the White House over the next 2 weeks. We will talk about that. The Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, getting pressure to go along with the Obama administration's favored deal to let banksters off the hook. The Verizon protest, strike, 45,000 workers, is over. The deal and the negotiations, however, are not. More as the show continues. But first, let's listen to this.
The dramatic moment of opposition gunmen surrounding and entering the home of Muammar Gaddafi captured in this exclusive phone interview with Al Jazeera.
I've never been aggressive to anyone and have always wanted the best for all Libyans, in the past and also for the future. I've never been a government or security official. However, I can tell you the absence of wisdom and foresight is what brought us here today. Our differences could have been solved very easily. I'm being attacked right now. This is gunfire inside my house. They're inside my house.
The mood of the opposition supporters turned to anger as the International Criminal Court's chief prosecutor announced a plan for Saif al-Islam to face judgment in The Hague, a judgment the rebels felt that should be passed in Libya.
So there you have it. Some of the amazing footage from this weekend. Streaming Al Jazeera and streaming CNN International, all from my secret computer. We will discuss the implications of this with Heather Hurlburt in just a moment. I got to tell you, it was impressive to see the celebration seemingly across the country. But again, I have some questions as to America's involvement in this. Seems to me we surpassed the UN mandate. I'll ask Heather Hurlburt her opinion on this. And, of course, many questions remain. Who knows what is next for Libya? But we'll talk to Heather Hurlburt to find out more.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone, the executive director of the National Security Network, Heather Hurlburt. Thanks for joining us, Heather.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, Heather, let me ask you just, well, first off, what is the status now? I mean, have they found Gaddafi? Is it, have the rebels taken over the entire country? What is the status in Libya?
As best we know, they have not found Gaddafi yet. They have got the two sons, including the one son who apparently has basically been the guy running the country for the last few months. But nobody seems to know, at least the last I've seen, where Gaddafi is, and there still seem to be some pockets of the capital, including, ironically, the pocket where all the foreign journalists are holed up. So we're not done yet, but big chunks of Gaddafi's personal security forces have surrendered. There doesn't seem to be any organized fighting back, so we seem to be at the beginning of the end, or the end of the beginning, or however you want to frame it.
And so what happens next? I mean, obviously, that's the $64,000 question. But what happens next? The Transitional National Council, my understanding, has, with the help of Western governments, been basically creating a charter of sorts, like a 70-page document that sort of outlines what happens next. Do you have a sense of what's in that, and whether or not that's already being implemented?
Well, so we'll start with what should happen next, and on a couple of different fronts, what you hope is that among Libyans, you have an immediate effort to bring in as many groups and people as possible, you know, to the broad group that's in now. So you reach out to Gaddafi's ethnic group, who obviously were one of the people who benefited most from his rule and are where you're going to have a lot of malcontents. You reach out to the folks who were running the resistance underground in Tripoli and other places, and who seem to have been responsible for this last bit going as easily as, somewhat to people's surprise, it did. You reach out to the elements of the armed forces and the government who hadn't come over. So that happens on the ground. And then working with the United Nations, the suggestion has been that the Transitional Council and the UN together put forward a set of, this is how this is going to work. These are the fundamental elements of a constitution. This is how we're going to work toward having a broadly representative government. This is how we're going to constitute interim government that's transparent. And importantly, this is how we're going to bring the petroleum back online and start producing income to meet the needs of the citizenry again, so that you don't get into one of these post-conflict situations where not only is there a lot of simmering resentment, but there's no resources and people continue to have the kind of privation they've had for the last couple of months. At the same time, countries outside Libya need to think through what they can do to help, what the UN can do, what the Arab League can do, what the EU can do, and what the U.S. can do. And I deliberately put the U.S. last because the U.S. has a role to play, but all of those other actors arguably have a greater role to play. And you see, you know, in American politics, people jumping up and down and saying, oh, the U.S. needs to do this, the U.S. needs to do that. And, you know, in point of fact, the U.S. played a significant role in getting here. Others ought to be taking the lead at this point.
And this is a particularly difficult situation because after 42 years of rule by Gaddafi, there really is no institutional infrastructure that sort of predates him or that exists sort of parallel to him, is there?
No, there is not. And Gaddafi worked very hard to make sure there wasn't, and that, you know, indeed it was a bit of a divide and rule. So that's going to be one of the big obstacles they face. The plus side that you've seen people commenting on this morning is that everybody in Libya understands that, and that you've seen various rebels saying, look, we know, on the one hand, we did this and we're very proud. On the other hand, we know we wouldn't be here without the West. So people who are experts and spend a lot of time working with Libyans are hopeful that they'll actually be able to be useful collaboration that actually, you know, puts together a structure that Libyans can manage themselves, to continue doing this themselves, and that there won't be the kind of, oh, we have nothing to learn from foreigners, that you understandably get sometimes.
And, of course, those Europeans really want access to that oil.
Well, they have access to that oil, except, of course, it's been turned off because of the conflict, which, of course, you could argue was also due to Libyan policy. So it's in the Europeans' interest to put together, to help the Libyans put together a government that's transparent and effective, that convinces the oil companies they want to come back, that convinces the foreign engineers who basically run production for the Libyans to want to come back. So it's in the Europeans' interest, it's in outsiders' interest, it's in the corporations' interest, frankly, to do the right thing here and set something up that's stable and that gives the Libyan people the say in their own government that they were willing to die for. Now, of course, because it's in their interest, you know, and I know, doesn't mean it's going to happen, but there are reasons for some optimism here.
Let's talk about the U.S. involvement here. I was supportive of the idea that we would prevent a slaughter of civilians in Benghazi. It seems to me clear that, what is your opinion? Do you feel that that NATO forces and that the U.S. Exceeded the UN mandate in their role in being in such direct support of the rebel army?
So there's no question. I'm going to dodge your question a little bit, but I'm going to answer it in another way.
Well, it was nice of you at least to say that up front.
No, there is no question that many countries at the UN and many countries that voted for that resolution think that NATO exceeded the mandate. So, you know, we can either have an argument they did, they didn't, or we can say there is no question that there is a bad taste in the mouths of many in New York who, you know, were very comfortable, as you were and as I was, with the idea that you stepped in to prevent a humanitarian catastrophe, but not necessarily that you were bombing to open up roads for a rebel force. And I think, you know, there's a, you know, ultimately, how this turns out may have a lot to do with how that's perceived. I think on the plus side of the ledger, there were a lot of people celebrating in Benghazi last night who wouldn't have been alive if not for the NATO operation. On the negative side, it may be harder to do this again in the future because folks from other countries at the UN will say, well, you know, we're not signing up to topple another government. You know, there's a way that Gaddafi was so incredibly unpopular. He really had no friends in the international community, so that you won't see another case like this. So, you know, today is a day you see a lot of scenes of Libyan jubilation and a lot of symbolism. One of my favorite lines was the guy who said he wanted to get a sheep and take it to France and slaughter it for the president of France to say thank you, which was an image I really enjoyed imagining in my mind. So this is a day for a lot of joy, but it's frankly not a day for self-congratulation for anybody because we still don't know how this is going to play out. And, you know, there's the big plus, but also the big minus in terms of have we, as the U.S., as part of an international community, really figured out how we can marshal ourselves effectively and reliably to stop people from killing their own citizens.
So in other words, the paradox here is that by removing Gaddafi, I mean, that's part of the problem, frankly. By removing Gaddafi, that we may have made, at least in terms of the UN, interventions to protect civilians that much more difficult because we did not show that we had the ability to stop at that line.
Yep. Although your Freudian slip brings up another really important point, I think, which is if you contrast what we're seeing today with the operations against Saddam, you know, imagine how different things would look in the Middle East now if it had been Iraqis who toppled Saddam as opposed to Americans. Imagine how many of the problems we faced, the number of American lives that were lost, the increase in terrorist recruitment that we wouldn't have faced if we had been willing to be patient and support the Iraqis in dealing with their internal situations. So that's a place where, you know, we should look at what's just happened and say, you know, it is actually possible for American foreign policy to learn something.
Do we know how many civilian deaths have taken place in Libya since the beginning of this conflict?
I have to say, I could quote you a number, but I wouldn't even trust the number I quoted myself. I'm going to tell you we don't know. I think eventually, you know, we'll have better sort of forensic studies and we'll know. And right now we have a fair number of propaganda studies one way or the other. Thousands, definitely. not more than tens of thousands.
Let me, I've found it very difficult to find those numbers, I should say, but and I know that you've got to run. So let me ask you just one more final question in terms of the implications of U.S. foreign policy going forward. One of the biggest issues, and I one of the reasons why I supported at least the intervention up to a certain point was because of the UN authorization. There was one other element that was missing in terms of the legality of this action, and that is congressional authorization. What does this say? I mean, it's just simply another log on the fire, or another sort of, I guess, piece of the puzzle that has been removed in terms of Congress's authority over our over war making. I mean, because they seem to have completely abdicated their responsibility here.
I will be perplexed about that to my dying day. Why there was not an effort from Congress to assert the congressional prerogative. I mean, something else that I'm just constantly perplexed about is that you had, you know, the Senate passed a resolution supporting a UN no-fly zone, passed it by a pretty healthy margin. And then you had many of the same people coming out and saying, oh, this is so terrible, the War Powers Act. But none of them ever actually, you know, went beyond just vaguely discussing the idea of having a resolution. And then last night you had Senator McCain and Senator Graham come out and say, well, it's great that this had happened, but it would have been even better if there had been more U.S. air power or more U.S. ground troops. And I thought, you know, I was trying to imagine that we'd had simultaneous with the budget debate and the near, you know, the near loss of our ability to borrow money, that we'd also been having a debate about ground forces in Libya. And I thought, gosh, you know, these guys just don't inhabit the same reality I inhabit.
Well, so, those two, honestly, I don't think you can get more craven than them. And, you know, we'll talk about it afterwards. But, I mean, that is just one of the most ridiculous and craven sort of statements I think I've ever seen in my entire life, frankly, from those two. But isn't this a problem, though, going forward? Haven't we sort of like created certain precedents that could be very dangerous? I mean, to the extent that illegal, in my opinion, and I think it's certainly international opinion, of invasion occupation of Iraq may have provided some hesitation for actions like this in the future, this has sort of reopened that door, hasn't it?
I don't really think this is comparable to Iraq. I mean, in part because there was no use of ground troops, there was such, and there was, you know, the sort of stepping back rather than the continually upping the stakes and upping the stakes and upping the stakes. So I disagree with you on the broader sense. In the narrow sense of, we've established yet again that Congress is not in any way, you know, a full partner or an active participant in decisions to go to war. That's the precedent that I think has been, you know, considerably strengthened by this.
All right. Well, Heather Hurlburt, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're very busy today, and I appreciate your giving us some insight into this.
Well, Sam, it's always great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. I will remind you just as to why John McCain and Lindsey Graham are so just stunningly craven and just pathetic. My God, did these guys ever look in the mirror and just? I guess you'd have to. Maybe it's just it's dark and I don't. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. Plenty more to talk about, and of course, back after this. All right, folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. What is it that Michelle Bachmann said about McCain and Lindsey Graham?
It's a lot of chutzpah.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of chutzpah. We'll get to that in just a moment.
It's a lot of chutzpah.
I understand. Please. It's like being around, it's like Passover with Michelle Bachmann. Everybody walking around, it's a bunch
of chutzpah.
You're going to have to forgive me, folks. I got a soundboard on my computer now. And I put that on there. It's the only other one that I have. I mean, I have this.
Where has my little dog gone? Where can he be?
I got to figure out a way of fast-forwarding this to where she gets to the doggy.
Where can he be?
Oh, yeah, I think this is it.
Where has my little dog gone?
I do want to talk about this McCain statement on Libya. Stunning. Just stunning.
Where can he be? Where can
this is my favorite part of the song. This is back in the good old days. That's back before her mind was infected by Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez. Unbelievable. Obviously, you know, the pictures of people being liberated in Tripoli and the incredible, obviously, jubilation in Benghazi, very impressive. And Juan Cole reports that the most important development in the last couple of days was, well, let me read it, with the capital creating its own national mythos of revolutionary participation. Apparently, there was a lot of, essentially, rather than just being the rebels crashing into Tripoli, there were revolts within Tripoli itself that have been developing over the past couple of months. Instead of being liberated and somewhat subjected from the outside by Berber or Senesarian revolutionaries, Tripoli enters the Second Republic with its own uprising to its name as a full equal, able to gain seats on the transitional National Council once the Gaddafis and their henchmen are out of the way. And that is obviously a good thing in terms of the chances of Libya being stable in the future, in the near future. Statistically speaking, the odds of Libya not being under the arm of the thumb of a strong man in the years to come are statistically fairly low. And this has come at the expense of thousands of civilians of deaths, which is not to say that those deaths wouldn't have taken place under Gaddafi anyways. I mean, there could have been tens of thousands of deaths had there not been some type of intervention to protect civilians. The question is to whether or not we should have gone beyond that mandate. Some people argue that the UN mandate said by any means necessary, and the argument being that Gaddafi's regime presented an existential threat to all civilians. That seems a little broad to me. And this is something that should have been done with congressional authorization. So it remains to be seen what is going to happen there. But there is this 70-page plan that was drawn up by the TNC, the Transitional National Council, with, I guess, help from the West. And the plans are highly reliant on the defection of parts of the Gaddafi security apparatus. So the idea is that they understand that there should not be retribution. There should not be the functional equivalent of de-Ba'athization in Libya. And I think it's encouraging that you've already got Gaddafi's sons sent to the international court, the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and presumably there's a seat there with Muammar's name on it, which, you know, it's another institution that I'd like to see be used more. In fact, that's probably what we should be doing with any of our terrorist suspects, or at the very least being able to provide them a genuine trial instead of the kangaroo courts that we have. I mean, we as a nation are becoming sort of the we've moved to sort of the middle, if not the back end of the pack in terms of these things, right? Shutting down cell phone communications to stop protests. Having kangaroo courts unable to actually try any of those criminals that we capture, or we just assassinate them. It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. But as this continues, we will try and get other voices on to give us a different perspective of this as well. It is, in my estimation, it's hard to argue that this is analogous to what happened in Iraq, just because the UN, at the very least, authorized some measure of intervention. And the Arab states were involved in this, at least to the extent that they provided financing and some measure of international recognition to the legitimacy of this. But I do consider that I do believe that we overshot the mandate, and that there should have been congressional approval for any of these actions. But with all of my reservations about what we did in this conflict, in this Libyan conflict aside, and with all of the emotions that are involved in seeing hundreds of thousands of Libyans spared Gaddafi, what is stunning is the incredible, just seething resent of conservatives. They just don't know. They love war. They love a neocon agenda. This is something they love. But they are baffled because they hate Obama. They are so desperate for power. They are so craven in the way that they will politicize anything. This is the institution. The Republican Party is the institution who is focusing like a laser beam to crash our economy because they think it's going to behoove them in the 2012 election. So one would think it's impossible for them to actually surpass that bar in cravenness. But we've seen it today from John McCain and Lindsey Graham. Shut that closet door, will you? It's bad for the sound.
Sorry.
John McCain and Lindsey Graham issued a joint statement last night on the developments in Libya.
The end of the Gaddafi regime in Libya is a victory for the Libyan people and for the broader cause of freedom in the Middle East and throughout the world. This achievement was made possible first and foremost by the struggle and sacrifice of countless Libyans whose courage and perseverance we applaud.
It's true.
We also commend our British and French and other allies, as well as our Arab partners, especially Qatar and the UAE, for their leadership in this conflict.
That's true. The Obama administration made a point of trying to put the international community out in front of the U.S. Obviously, there was U.S. command or a commander of NATO, but they did this for very good strategic reasons, I think.
Americans can be proud of the role our country has played in helping to defeat Gaddafi. But, we regret that this success was so long in coming due to the failure of the United States to employ the full weight of our air power.
Are you kidding me? This is just stunning. Can you imagine what would happen to a U.S. senator? Well, you don't even have to imagine. When Howard Dean made the exact correct point that the capture of Saddam Hussein did not mean the end of Libya, of of Iraq and the problems it would mean for this country. Remember now, he said that in 2003, 8 years ago. He was nearly lynched in this country, not just by the Republican Party, but by the entire establishment. And yet, this crazy old man and his sidekick go out and criticize the United States for not being more aggressive in success? Stunning. And that would be stunning in and of itself if it wasn't for the fact that this is John McCain speaking at a conference with that same Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman in Libya 2 years ago, almost to the day. 2 years ago, almost to the day. 18 months before the Obama administration made the decision to help with air power. 18 months! And this is what he had to say in Libya.
We discussed these and other issues in a spirit of mutual respect and friendship. The ties between the United States and Libya have taken a remarkable and positive turn in recent years, and we intend to do everything we can to help ensure that the relations between our countries deepen in all facets of the relationship. Our visit has been brief, productive, interesting, and informative, and we are glad to have had the opportunity to come to this beautiful country.
That's a lot of chutzpah.
That is a lot of chutzpah. I mean, can you
a lot of chutzpah.
Believe this?
When I was reading the statement, I couldn't help but picture Statler and Waldorf up in the balcony reading the statement.
This is just stunning. These guys have absolutely zero, I mean, credibility. I've never seen such shamelessness in my life. Really stunning. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C. today, I think there are more protesters. This is civil disobedience. We're going to see more people get themselves arrested peacefully. They seem to be, you know, the most mild-mannered. If you saw these people at your local supermarket, at your local Lowe's, the video is up. They are protesting and sending a message to President Obama, who has the ability to stop this Keystone pipeline from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, down to the Gulf of Mexico. People have a problem with this because the first Keystone pipeline has already leaked, I think, multiple times over the past year. Certainly over a dozen times. It's polluted one river, is my understanding. This is even worse on two levels. One, because the material that will flow through this pipeline is not a pure oil. It is incredibly viscous. It is incredibly corrosive. It needs to be heated through the entire pipeline so that it will flow through and not jam up. So there is the sort of immediate practical dangers. But as Bill McKibben, who came on this program 2 weeks ago and announced that there would be this movement to get arrested, and as Dave Roberts from Grist also explained to us, the real issue here is that NASA scientists have said that if this carbon deposit is tapped and depleted, because it is the second largest concentration of carbon, of CO2, or of carbon, I should say, which would create CO2 gases, in the world after the Saudi oil fields, that this would represent essentially game over in terms of climate change, that there is no turning back once you tap and burn this. President Obama, because there must be explicit authorization from the president, must sign off on this because it is a pipeline that crosses the U.S.-Canada border. By doing nothing, he could kill this. By doing nothing. Didn't he say something about the planet is going to be cleaner or no longer going to be warming at the rate once he was inaugurated? I accept, at some level, he does not have full responsibility, or if you want, even the majority of responsibility for not getting any climate change regulation passed. I accept the fact that there are whack-a-job Republicans in the Congress who are constantly attacking the EPA. But you cannot defend the president if he signs off on this. There is no defense for it. None. None. Sorry. Tweet me all you want. There's just no defense for it. And the cops, meanwhile, are... here's Bill McKibben's statement from jail. Hello, everyone. We don't need sympathy. We need company. It's clear to us that the police were hoping to deter this action, and it's equally clear to us the opposite will be the result. Apparently, the standard operating procedure in situations like this, because this happens not all the time, but with some... this is not a completely earth-shattering occasion where people get themselves arrested in front of the White House. And 350.org organizers have been talking to the Capitol Police. The Park Police for weeks about this action. Generally, what happens is they arrest you. They give you a $100 ticket. And then they release you. That's what's happened in the anti-war protest in, I think it was December, that Mike Malloy was involved in. Another one, or maybe it was March, on behalf of Bradley Manning. I think it was in March when Malloy got arrested. And in this instance... because it was at the beginning of this wave of arrests that are planned of civil disobedience, they're holding the majority of the people in these tiny cells for 2 days, from Saturday to Monday, as a way of discouraging people from doing this in the future. I don't think that's going to work. Good luck to them. I hope it brings more attention to this. You can go to tarsandsaction.org, tarsandsaction.org. We'll put a link on the site. Folks, I will be on Dylan Radigan's program today. I imagine we'll be discussing Libya. I am only able to go on Dylan Radigan's program, and I am only able to maintain this show. Look, I don't think I would be getting on TV ever if it wasn't for this show. And I certainly wouldn't be able to take a couple hours off of some other job that I might have if I wasn't receiving support for the show from members. It's true. I have other jobs. I do Ring of Fire radio, weekend radio. Not as lucrative as one might think. I'm doing some writing. Not as lucrative as one might think. I'm stitching it together, though, folks. But the main source of my revenue is this program. Or it's pretty close. Hopefully, it'll get more so. And so you're supporting this program not only provides you with 33 cents a day. You get an hour and a half of content a day. You also make ensure that the first 40 minutes are maintained and continue. And, you know, you're basically keeping me in the game so I can go on to Radigan's show. I can go on and argue with Kudlow, etc., etc. But, you know, the main thing is that I think hopefully you find the show entertaining and informative, and it's worth 33 cents a day. What can you get for 33 cents? Seriously. You can't even get a pack of gum. Pack of gum costs $1.50 in New York City.
Half a banana.
You can get half a banana.
Be about 33 cents.
But who wants a half a banana? Because it'll be all brown. I want, you know, because you'd have to cut it in half and then walk around with it. And then it would be full lint in your pocket. Folks, you can also support the show, of course, by buying your Amazon crap through our Amazon link at majority.fm. You can also buy your coffee, tea, and chocolate at justcoffee.coop. Fair trade. You can get organic. You get a 10% discount with the coupon code MAJORITY. It is stunning to me that anybody would be drinking coffee at home and not buying just coffee. How could you not try it once? You get a 10% discount, for God's sakes. What's wrong with you? And, of course, I always encourage all of you, donateyouraccount.com. We really, if you have a Facebook account, I get tons of feedback saying that they get extra likes because of it. And, of course, you know, your friends want to know what's going on in the world. My own wife does not listen to this program on a regular basis. But every once in a while, she'll say, hey, good job on that blankety blank story. Did you listen to the show? Oh, no. No, I just checked it out on the YouTube, the clip that you sent out. It was good. I got 3 likes because of it. And then that's the only positive feedback I get at home. And the rest of the time, it's all just litany of problems. So please, donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. Folks, now it's on to the better half of the program. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman facing pressure to sign on to this crappy national banksters get out of free jail card. The Verizon strike over. Rick Perry. Oh, I know I don't cover, you know, I'm not going to cover much of this, but this Rick Perry story is just too good. This is just stunning. I mean, fantastic. All right, folks, join me in the better half. 646-257-3920, or, of course, you can IM me at Majority FM. See you there in just a moment.